You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In 1931, the Museum of Modern Art commissioned the Mexican muralist Diego Rivera to create a series of portable frescoes for a one-man show at the museum. He painted eight in all, and now, 80 years later, the museum is showing five of those frescoes, along with related paintings, drawings, sketches, and photos, in a show called Diego Rivera, Murals for the Museum of Modern Art. It's on view until May 14th, and I'm pleased to welcome its curator, Leah Dickerson, to our show today to talk about it. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
It also turns out to be Diego Rivera's 125th birthday today. Did you know that?
I did. Happy birthday, Diego.
The show features five of the frescoes. What happened to the other three?
Two are at the Philadelphia Museum.
And they wouldn't lend it to you?
They couldn't travel for condition reasons. And one is somewhere unknown to us. It was sold in Sotheby's first Latin American auction in 1977. And we know it was trucked to Mexico City. And that's it. We don't know the location. But we have a wonderful drawing that shows the subject of that fresco panel in the show.
Well, if these things were done, commissioned by the Museum of Modern Art, how did two wind up in Philadelphia and the other one at Sotheby's?
Well, they had a long and circuitous path. Two of them were bought by Smith College Museum immediately after the show. Then in 1940, Philadelphia did a museum on Mexican modernism. They showed these works there, two works there, and they were bought by a Philly patron. And then the other four stayed with the Huaya Gallery, which represented Rivera. And then they weren't sold until 1977 in that auction that I talked about.
Why did the museum's director, Alfred H. Barr Jr., invite Diego Rivera to have a solo show at the museum in 1931? Wasn't he the only the second artist to be given such a show? The first one was Henri Matisse.
That's exactly what I find so intriguing about this project. It's a story about when MoMA was a really young startup institution. It was founded only 2 years ago, 2 years before, in 1929. Barr himself was a really young guy, and the idea of a retrospective of a living artist was terribly new. And then the second only retrospective that the museum holds is a 45-year-old guy. It's a mid-career show, and a Mexican who's an outspoken communist. And to think that Barr's second project was of a lefty Mexican artist is, you know, puts a wrench in the way we normally think of the early history of the museum.
Well, this is in the second year of the Great Depression.
Absolutely, and Barr is very prescient about choosing artists that can speak to a particular moment in time, and I think he was well aware that Rivera was the kind of artist who could speak about collective political values in a moment of social and economic crisis, and he was amazingly popular in 1931.
But the museum had been financed by a number of millionaires. Doing something that might upset the people who are paying for all of this?
No, this is what I think is interesting. It's absolutely to the contrary. Abby Rockefeller, one of the founders of the Museum of Modern Art, is absolutely the driving force behind this project. She supported Rivera from an early date. She financed his trip to New York. She was terribly involved with the organization of the show. She was its patron saint in every way. And she knew his politics. It was no surprise to her. And the other key factor is
later the Rockefellers had problems with Rivera.
Absolutely, and that's a tale that we tell in the show. When Rivera came to MoMA, he did this group of fresco panels. He was working in a studio in the Heckscher building, which was the museum's original building. It's now Bergdorf's. He was in the sixth-floor gallery. He was painting around the clock with two assistants. He would take breaks and go over to the Rockefeller family townhouse and begin to talk to Abby and Nelson about a commission for the Rockefeller Center, which was then under construction.
So he was painting in front of museum goers?
He wasn't painting. It was his studio wasn't open to the public, but everybody who was anybody in New York would stop by. And there's talk of the town pieces in the New Yorker that talk about people coming to the studio, staying until 4 a.m. in the morning, that mention his diet of coffee and grapefruit. It was really a place to be. And people were as intrigued to see him painting on site as they were with this idea of a retrospective of a living artist.
Was he married to Frida Kahlo at the time?
Yes, they were.
Was she here?
Yes, she was. And they were staying in the Barbizon Plaza on Central Park South in a room filled with flowers by Abby Rockefeller.
How popular was the show?
It was a record-breaking show. The first show was Henri Matisse, and he was not a surprising choice for a museum of modern art. He was already a well-known European modernist, an eminence grise, and that show had a respectable audience. The Rivera show almost tripled the Matisse audience, so he was extraordinarily popular. And what was interesting to me is in the press release, MoMA paired these two projects, saying that one offered a European perspective on modernity and one offered an American perspective. So he was offered up as an American artist in this early moment of the museum's history.
Which is interesting because in Mexico, you get a sense that they see themselves as closer, more related aesthetically to Europe than to the United States. Rivera was a Cubist at one point in Paris.
Absolutely. He was a Cubist. And not only that, in the immediate wake of the Mexican Revolution, he was sent to Italy by a very progressive cultural minister in Mexico, José Vasconcelos, to study the Italian masters in order to create a new art form for the new post-revolutionary Mexico state. So in these frescoes, you see a lot of Mantegna and Uccello and all the Italian fresco masters.
My guest is Leah Dickerson, who is the curator of this show, Diego Rivera Murals, for the Museum of Modern Art, currently on display and running through May 14th. Well, let's talk about frescoes because they're done on walls. You paint directly into fresh plaster.
That's right.
But these are called portable frescoes?
Well, Rivera in 31 was a huge artistic celebrity. He had been published in the pages of Fortune magazine. But he was famous as a muralist, and that presents immediately a problem. How do you do an exhibition of an artist who's famous as a muralist when frescoes, by definition, are fixed on site? So when conversations for the exhibition began, Rivera began experimenting with what he called a portable fresco. And what he came up with was creating a steel and cement backing on which he would apply the layers of traditional fresco. So he's combining this traditional technique that goes back to Pompeii with the materials and methods of modern building, concrete and steel.
And was he painting in to it with egg tempera the way Italian artists had done?
No, it's not egg tempera. It's true buon fresco technique, which means that he used natural pigments, mineral pigments, and pigments that were derived from plants and bugs, and he grinds them until they're fine. Hand grinds them, or has his assistants do it, and then he applies that pigment with just water, no binder, onto the final layer of the fresco surface. And that had calcium carbonate in it. So it binds in order to pull the pigments into the surface. It doesn't sit on top like an oil painting, but it's bound. And when the technique's executed correctly, fresco is as durable as anything and as hard and heavy as cement.
And if they're kept clean, they're as bright today
they're
as
absolutely
they were
bright. And the
400, 500 years
that's
ago.
That's one of the things I think you see in the show is how bright fresco is and that how from this limited range of pigments he creates these vibrant, powerful pictures.
Now, the five frescoes that he did first are all about Mexican history. Did he do those in Mexico?
No, he didn't. He did the first five. He came up. He was working with great speed to get things prepared for the December 1931 opening. And the first five that he did were all on topics of Mexican history. Four of those five pull on things that he had done in his famous Mexican mural cycles, but he adapts them subtly. And then the fifth one, Uprising, is a new composition. And then what's interesting is the opening happens. It's a great party. New York's elite is there, Henry Luce, the Rockefellers, Paul Robeson, Hedy Lamarr, and Rivera keeps on working as if the opening never happened. And he delivers three more panels, this time on subjects of New York, labor, class, depression, construction in New York, almost as if he wanted to say that I'll give you these Mexican subjects that you want, but I'm going to look at you guys too.
And the cover of the catalog is a cityscape.
Absolutely. He's fascinated with the construction in New York. And in fact, 1931, too, is an interesting moment in time. It's a paradoxical moment because it's the absolute bottom of the Great Depression. 25% or more of Americans are unemployed, and yet it's the height of the skyscraper race. Building after building is put up on the New York skyline by this labor made available by the Great Depression, and Rivera is fascinated with this.
So he does this piece called Frozen Assets, which depicts a three-tiered cross-section of the city. We have the skyline above, a homeless shelter, and a bank vault below.
Yes, absolutely. It's an amazing thing. And he's clearly implying that this, you know, dramatic skyline that we think is characteristically New York is made possible by the dispossession of the city's poorest citizens and the squirreling away of assets by its richest citizens. And each of the things that you see are based on sites that he visited in New York. The homeless shelter is the municipal pier that was on East 25th Street. That was a steel and glass shed that was there for unemployed men.
Sounds similar to some of the things we're discussing today.
It is similar to some of the things that we're discussing today, and it's extraordinary. I mean, how many great works of art do you know that place the homeless shelter at the very center of the composition?
By the way, we have some examples on a slideshow that we put on our show page at WNYC.org. And then, of course, you probably are going to want to go to the Museum of Modern Art and see the whole show. You have sketches here as well?
Yes, we have sketches. He's the kind of artist that sketches constantly. And one of the things that was interesting for me in this project was it ended up being a show as much about drawing as it is about fresco. Because to make fresco, you have to move quickly before that final layer dries. And you have to do it with confidence and bravura. And that's what Rivera has. And he does it by working out his ideas and drawing and being a fast and facile draftsman.
Only one of these pieces, you said, agrarian leader Zapata, has remained in the museum's collection.
In fact, it was bought after the show, 8 years later, with money that was given by Abby Rockefeller, even though that this was in the aftermath of the Rockefeller Center fiasco.
How often is that kept on display?
It's the
one with Zapata with the horse?
That's absolutely right. And it's an incredible iconography that he's giving to the revolution. Zapata stands there as the apotheosis of the revolutionary leader, standing with his white steed, and he's wearing the humble garments of a peasant, even though Zapata himself was known for wearing the outfits of a charro, you know, with the tight black pants and silver ornamentation and a big sombrero.
Are these works fragile? You said the Philadelphia Museum was concerned.
Yes, they're fragile. They're fragile in the sense that they are heavy and have a fragile surface, which is a tough combination. And in moving them, we used the advice of structural engineers to create these incredible crates. And it was a carefully planned transport.
Although frescoes can be removed, we saw that after the floods in Florence.
Yes, absolutely.
They were actually pulled off of walls in a very sophisticated way and then mounted onto canvas.
Yes, and that backing that he created for them of steel and concrete is really tough and without torquing.
Will the show travel to other places after
no.
it closes
Mm-mm.
May 14th?
Mm-mm. No, it won't. And for me, I think one of the things that's most interesting is he's the kind of artist that's given this retrospective at a museum, an incredible invitation, and he also uses it as a way of putting pressure on the museum, to putting it in an uncomfortable place.
Well, he then put Rockefeller Center in an even more uncomfortable place. Can you talk a moment about what happened
Yes,
there?
That's an extraordinary commission. Rivera was invited, ultimately, with the strong patronage of Abby Rockefeller and her son Nelson Rockefeller to submit a design for the new Rockefeller Center, which was being built while he was here in New York. And he does. He submits a pencil sketch, very intricately done. It's actually extraordinary to me to look at that sketch because even in this initial design phase, it's already a allegory between competing social systems, between capitalism and communism. And that design was accepted. And then as he continues working, he adds an image of Lenin. And that image is problematic for a number of reasons. It's problematic to the Rockefeller Center's developers who hate having the image of a communist leader in corporate headquarters. And the image of Lenin in 1933 is provocative as well because that's the height of the cult of Stalin. So to show Lenin alone is an implicit rebuke to Stalinism and the official party orthodoxies of the Mexican Communist Party and the U.S. Communist Party and the Soviet Union. But when I had the opportunity to speak to David Rockefeller, Abby's son, about this, he said, well, the image of Lenin was a problem, but the Rockefellers could have handled a little left politics. The real problem was that Rivera put in an image of my father, John D. Rockefeller Jr., drinking gin and hanging out with women of loose morals. And in fact, there is a little image of a man with spectacles that resembles John D. Rockefeller Jr. And that was totally against type. The Rockefellers were a Baptist family, important major supporters of the prohibition legislation. And in 1933, when the Rockefeller Center mural was being made, prohibition was declared an utter political disaster. So this was a very pointed barb.
So it just came down.
It took about a year, but within a year, it was taken down.
There is a sketch in the show.
There's a sketch and a series of documents and photographs that Rivera's assistant took when she understood that the project was in trouble, and she brought a camera in under her overcoat and took these photographs that are the only extant images we have of what that mural looked like.
Diego Rivera, Murals for the Museum of Modern Art, is on view at the Museum of Modern Art until May 14th, and my great thanks to its curator, Leah Dickerson, for being on our show today. You also wrote the catalog?
I did it with Anna Indich-Lopez, who's an art historian here in New York at the Graduate Center and at CUNY, and we co-authored the catalog.